This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, on the job site. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your workmates, your next door neighbour, and even your mum to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. If you're up at Chill Out, I hope you are enjoying the day. If you're not up at Chill Out, think about going up. Joy's up there. There's a lot going on. But we're here in Melbourne in the studio. Macca, Paul and Fiona.
Fiona, absolutely. So next up, we are talking to a regular guest on the program, Benjamin Preece, at the journalist at The Age, specialises in Victorian state yeah. issues. Welcome to the program, Ben. Thanks for taking the time out to talk to us today.
Thanks very much. Good to be with you.
How are you, Ben? It's Macca here. It's we'll start in a minute on the emergency services legislation, but initially I'd like to talk about Australian Associated Press, an organisation that is closing in a couple of months, and a lot of people don't understand that a lot of the content, for newspapers and online is provided by Australian Associated Press. Got a long history, I think. Nearly 70 years, is that right, Benjamin?
That's right. And so Australian Associated Press has basically provided an invaluable service for decades, as you say, for probably very little kind of recognition in the community. I've been working alongside these journalists almost every day of my career. I see what they do close up. I see the work that they turn in, and I think it's kind of hard to overestimate the importance of what they do to for mainstream journalism. So basically, what they've got is that they have reporters who will be doing I guess that I wouldn't want to say that it's not a basic service, but they essentially turn in stories from court, parliament, crime scenes, press conferences, you name it. But they will do reports that are kind of just very straight news reports. They tend not to do they do a little bit of features and analysis and things like that, but the main thing they do is just very straight news reporting. It's fast, it's accurate, and it's at the disposal of newsrooms around the country. So often when you see, a with AAP tag at the bottom of a story, they might have contributed a lot of copy to that. And I think that journalists and editors use them a lot for, just for fact-checking, checking the report that their own reporters have got the story right, and populating web pages and news pages, and for broadcast media online as well, they do an enormous amount of work. So I'm a bit concerned about losing them, and I think that newsrooms around the country are going to have to rethink a little bit the way they do things because of the closure of AAP.
I've been reading that, in one sense, the AAP journalists are kind of like first responders in a way. They're on the scene, they were around the bushfire regions talking to people, and they were going in just on their own without even cameramen. They were just going in and they were discovering, and they were getting all the information, they were getting the facts without the song and dance that comes along with the media entourage and things like that. So they're really able to build the story with the most accuracy. And to think that this that the service will be gone. I mean, it's a devastating thing for the Australian public, because we're not going to have access to as much of that information, or the news services. The mainstream media won't be able to access that service, and so we will all be the poorer for not having this service. Why is it that we can't get them back?
Like, why has it changed? Why is it closing, Benjamin?
Well, officially it's a financial decision. So they were predominantly owned by Nine and News Corp, and I think it's a similar story to what we've seen around the world, where pressures on news services are so great, the financial pressures, that it makes what was once a kind of lucrative industry. I mean, it's just not like that anymore. I think it's financial, essentially.
So, Benjamin, okay, so Nine, you know, which includes, you know, Macquarie Radio, Channel 9, you know, the old Fairfax papers, and News Corp, they funded it. Now they're not going to. So all those journalists are not going to be employed. So how are we not going to have a drought of valuable, you know, news copy, you know, for you guys, you know, to work with and to keep us informed? So what's going to replace it? Nothing.
Well, my hope is that these big media organisations, they see the opportunity. They're not going to be spending all this money on AAP as a business, that they will free up some funds so that they can hire some of these journalists. A lot of the journalists for AAP that I worked for, they're really highly skilled, excellent journalists, and I hope that they find work in with the Nine media stable, with News Corp and other media organisations who paid for like a subscription for AAP, but are not going to be able to run their copy anymore. So I hope that they use some of that money to actually hire some of these journalists full time. I mean, they're really excellent, highly skilled reporters and photographers.
Look, it's a great shame. And look, I know there's some discussion, a lot of people saying, well, hang on, can't we get together some funding to keep this going? I would have thought perhaps some of the journalism initiatives, the regional journalism initiatives, the federal government reluctantly funded. Perhaps some of that money can be repurposed, because I don't see a lot of it being spent in the purpose for which it was intended. I don't know, perhaps it's gone to a swimming pool in North. But I would have thought all of us, you know, and, you know, it is hard to make money in media. I mean, I know that. You know that. But we're losing something very, very valuable. And, you know, our news sources are going to be reduced even further.
That's right. Well, I think the best that we can hope for at the moment is that hopefully newsrooms expand with some of the money that's been freed up from, from the closure of AAP. I mean, it's obviously, I wish it didn't have to be like that. It's not ideal. I consider the AAP journalists my colleagues, so I'm really upset for them. And, some of them are good friends of mine. But I think that, you know, if there's any silver lining at all in any of this, it's that newsrooms might see what's at stake here, what could be lost, and that they will hire these journalists so they can continue working full time as, you know, kind of full time hired reporters to keep doing what they were doing before.
Well, let's hope so.
I hope you're right.
Yep.
Now, Benjamin, for this week, Jill Hennessy, the Attorney General, introduced some amendments or some legislation to further protect emergency services workers from assault and to give some meaning to mandatory sentencing. This is the third attempt at this, and it's taken them a while from the outrage over some recent cases. Tell us, stepping through it, your understanding, how have they narrowed the definition or the clauses whereby judges can exercise discretion in sentencing someone who has assaulted an emergency service worker?
So I think we need to take a step back here and look at the there are some high profile cases where paramedics were assaulted just while they were on the job, and I think that it's a terrible look for for paramedics who are not they're not equipped with weapons or anything like that to defend themselves. When they're assaulted on the job, it's looked down upon in a very big way in the community. I think the obvious backlash when some of these cases happen is an example of that that listeners might remember. There was one case in particular where a man who had been at a festival. And had been had taken what was described in court as a cocktail of drugs. Later, assaulted a pair of paramedics. This created massive headlines. And he essentially avoided jail time by arguing that there was an underlying mental health condition, and that the drugs he'd taken on that particular weekend were part of part of the mix, and this is all kind of argued in court. And what was kind of spruced as very tough laws to ban or to stamp out violence against emergency services workers, where there were 6 month minimum sentences, well, they didn't apply. The judge decided that that didn't apply in that case, or that there was strong enough grounds for this man not to face jail time. So this was all playing out probably a year or two ago, and so what the government's done is they, as you say, they've had a third go at bringing in laws that will narrow the range of excuses for which you that you can argue in court if you assault an emergency services worker. And I think they're trying to strip out the drug and alcohol excuse. And I think they say they want to set the bar much higher for someone to argue that they're mentally unwell, and that is why they committed that offence. So basically, I think what they're trying to do is because it's kind of looked down upon so much by the community, where people might go into court and argue, well, I was affected by drugs and alcohol at the time that I committed this offence, and so therefore I shouldn't go to jail. And so I think the government wants to try and strip that out of the, of the kind of range of excuses that can be used in court.
Yeah. Look, I read the sentencing remarks in one of those particular... Look, I'm not going to name the guy. He's trying to get his life back together. But I read the sentencing remarks in that, and, I understand why the judge made the decision. I don't agree with it, but one thing that was obvious to me in those sentencing remarks was about 85% of it was about the offender, and very little was actually about the victim. And that victim, hasn't yet been able to go back to work. So the government, has acted on this. Quite why it has taken so long? Because it's not a big piece. It's not a big, not a lot of sheets of paper attached to this, Benjamin, as we know. Why it's taken them so long? And there are those that argue, some in the legal profession, that mandatory sentencing, they don't agree with it, and, oh, you know, putting people in jail isn't the cure. I say to them, okay, become a paramedic, get someone who's off their tits, come and beat the shit out of you, not be able to go back to work for 12 months or longer, and see if you hold the same view. Go and sit and sing Kumbaya in a park.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt that in the cases that we've been mentioning, that the paramedics involved were very upset about about the adequacy of the sentences there. I guess the government is kind of trying to take that into account more, and maybe kind of move these laws more in line with what they would perceive to be community sentiment. I guess one of the issues with that, though, is that I'm not sure how many people would take the time, as you've done, to read the judge's sentencing remarks and then kind of form a more fulsome view of the issue based on all of those facts. But still, I guess this is where the government, I guess, sees where the community feeling is at, and I guess that's why they've acted.
Yeah, and look, it's been interesting. I know it's something you've been following pretty closely, as I have. They have narrowed it, so basically, if you're off your tits, you're not going to be able to use that as an excuse. Let's see how it plays out. Look, once again, Benjamin, thanks for taking the time to talk to us. Thank you for your work in this area, and as a journalist generally, and I hope we get a better outcome for AAP. I'd certainly, there's a lot of people I'm sure would be prepared to put some money in to save it. Let's see if we can make it happen.
I hope you're right, and thank you for spending the time speaking about AAP this morning. I'm really glad that you've taken the time to kind of pay tribute to the work that to my friends and colleagues at AAP do. It's very important, so thank you.
No, it's a pleasure, and once again, Benjamin, thanks for your work and thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, great to be with you again.
Cheers. Bye.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.